You're listening to the Girls on the Big Blue Couch Show with Mandy B. Anderson and Rachel Chumley. Today on episode number 12, we share the lies I believed growing up in church.
Welcome to our show. We are Rachel Chumley and Mandy B. Anderson. We are co-founders of Big Blue Couch Coaching. We are both certified coaches. We're also speakers and writers, and we have been best friends for over 20 years. Big Blue Couch is actually a life coaching company, and we exist to help people who feel worthless and stressed and just unhappy in their lives. We work to equip you with the skills to conquer obstacles and discover your true self-worth and live a vibrant life. Today, we're going to actually talk about a spiritual coaching topic. A few months ago, an article went viral called Five Lies I Believe About Being a Christian Growing Up in Church. The author, Tyler Spiegel, shared different things that he believed about being a Christian growing up in the church as he did as a kid. And today, Mandy and I kind of want to take some of those lies that he wrote and talk a little bit about our own experience with these particular five lies is what he talked about, and our own experience growing up in church and whether or not we experienced these things in the churches that we grew up in.
And it'll be kind of interesting because we feel like we're not on the top of our game today.
Yeah, kind of. It's just one of those
days, I guess. We've been hangry and we've been talking about diet and stuff, so this will be fun.
Yeah, we had to have snacks before we went on. So
you always need snacks when you're recording.
We do.
I always do. You don't, but I do.
Well, generally, if you eat, though, I need to eat because, you know, no woman should eat alone. So
right. Nobody should eat alone. No person left behind. Okay, so let's dive in to these lies that we believed growing up in church. And what's the first lie, Rachel?
Lie number one is that your behavior affects God's love for you. So in essence, it's just the belief. And sometimes the churches that give the impression that your behavior determines God's love for you. Pretty much if you follow the guidelines and the rituals and the rules of that church, then you can be sure of God's love. And I really think this goes outside of the church is a lie people believe about Christianity.
I think so too. I think it's really just our society has this performance-based thinking where if I perform well, then I'll be accepted. And I think sometimes that gets leaked into the church. I don't know that I necessarily only felt that way about God's love for me. I think I felt that way about everything.
I would agree. I don't think I got it so much from it, my church necessarily growing up. I think it really depends on what kind of church denomination you're in.
Right.
There are some that definitely have more strict rules and guidelines. And if you go outside of that, there can be a problem as far as what God's acceptance of you. And sometimes it's not so much God's acceptance. To me, it seems more like the church's acceptance of you and the people in the congregation, how they accept you.
Yeah, I would agree. Maybe that's, but it does kind of trickle down into that belief that, you know, if these people accept me, then this must be how God accepts me.
Right.
Don't you think?
Right. I would think so. I would think it would change your mindset, especially because he's talking about growing up in a church. So it's what you perceive as a child. And as a child, not everything is going to be true that you perceive to be true. But when you grow up with the belief that your behavior affects God's love for you, that's a mindset that you really have to do a lot of work to change as an adult.
I had to have a coach once that was really helping me through a lot of, like, it was spiritual coaching. And she really had to work hard on me with this performance-based thinking. Even when you were saying this, I was sitting here reading it. I'm like, your behavior affects God's love for you. I'm like, that reminds me of something I learned. What is it? What was it called? And
it's
that performance-based thinking and just how it's so ingrained in you that you don't even realize you're doing it.
Right, absolutely. Well, and I think if you grew up in a church like Mandy and I grew up in a church, you probably can relate to this as well. Even if you grew up outside of the church, I think this might be a lie most people can relate to, is that behavior affects God's love for you. And thankfully, that is a lie.
Right. That is not the truth.
That is not the truth.
God loves you no matter. He loves you right where you're at.
Absolutely.
Obviously, he has some things that he would love to improve in your life. He has some things that he would love you to be able to change so that you can live fully and not be held back. But he loves you no matter where you're at.
Absolutely. So what is lie number two, Mandy?
Lie number two is that church is a weekly event and just a building. This is a big one.
This is a huge one.
I don't know how people in other areas of the United States feel about this one, but I know growing up in the Midwest, church was something that everybody does. Everybody attends.
Yep. I remember as a little kid, it was weird if you didn't attend church.
Yes. And I love how we wrote here in the notes that, you know, you get all dressed up in your Sunday best and your mom puts a roast in the oven and then you're in attendance every time the doors are open. You're there on Wednesday night. You're there for prayer service. You're there all the time.
Right. Sunday service in the morning. Yes. Sunday service at night.
And
just there.
It's something that I think, I don't know that it's necessarily a lie that that's what church is. I think church is a really big part of our lives, you know. But I think being able to recognize that the church is the people.
Absolutely.
It's not a building.
And I think the danger in this lie is that it turns it into something you do. And that was where the focus is, and the developing the relationship with each other, which absolutely we need fellowship with each other. You know, if you go to a church, that community is part of the reason why you are there. But we can take this and completely forget about the reason we really are there is to further develop our relationship with Jesus.
And I love how you put putting on your Sunday best, because in this day
and
age,
did you have Sunday clothes?
Yes,
that you could
always.
Only wear on Sundays?
Always.
I did too. And
always
there were always like
clothes.
Fancy dresses. I mean, it was never like you came to church in your jeans.
Yes.
You
came and that was even up until, you know, a couple of years ago.
Right.
Where that was a big deal. But now it seems like a lot of churches are changing that into, you know, we're wearing jeans. We're wearing even the leadership are wearing jeans. And just I think overall it makes people feel more welcome.
I agree.
Because not everybody has Sunday best clothes.
Right.
Or their Sunday best clothes maybe are not appropriate for what used to be seen in church.
Mm-hmm.
But by the churches nowadays changing that perception to, hey, it's okay to wear your jeans and bring your cup of coffee to church.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, cup of coffee.
Yes.
This is really funny. So just, the lie number two is also that church is just a building. I grew up in churches where if you would put tape on the newly painted wall, it was like the biggest sin ever if you wrecked the carpet when the carpet was new. I mean, heaven forbid you brought in your coffee.
Yes, and they had
sanctuary.
Signs.
Yes.
No food
no
in the
food
sanctuary.
Allowed.
And that's you just don't see that nowadays.
Not usually. They've seemed to have relaxed a little bit, which I think it is a good thing.
I think we need to
remember it's not just a building and it's not just an event to come there. It is about the relationship.
Absolutely. I really like lie number three. What is lie number three, Rachel?
Lie number three is that you should not express your struggles or doubts.
Fallacy. That is not true.
I think this also really depends on the church you attended growing up. Mm-hmm. Now, the churches I attended growing up, this was really something that we practiced. You didn't, you didn't go up to the altar. You didn't talk about anything that was really going on in your family. And I'm sure if you grew up in some more conservative type denominations, you can probably relate to this lie as well, is that you didn't. And if you did go up and admit some kind of struggle, it was like a huge deal. Like you were the only one dealing with it and struggling with it.
Right. But don't you remember like in our camp days, our Bible camp days? Because if you're new to our show, Rachel and I have known each other for over 20 years and we met at a Bible camp when we were in like junior high, grade school type age. And
Grade school.
Yeah. I don't know what time.
I think it was fifth grade.
I think so. So it was on the verge of junior high a couple
well,
years before.
I think
before.
Now that could probably be considered junior high.
Could be.
Depending on where you go to school at.
Who knows? Anyway, the point is we met a long time ago. And I feel like when we were at Bible camp, it always felt like we had to have some reason to go up to the altar. And if we didn't really have a real one,
crisis.
We kind of had to make one up.
You had to make one up, right? Like somebody had to have a crisis every summer so we could be, you know, crying.
And you had to get to the point where you could cry up at the altar.
Right.
Like that was a big deal. And not that I don't know that we necessarily made one up, like I said a moment ago, but I think we almost felt like if we didn't have that, we weren't worthy of being up there.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know that we were always sharing our real struggles.
No. And I think when we look back as children, it's sometimes hard to to share what a real struggle
I mean,
even
granted,
is. But
we had some real ones. But
I don't really remember seeing this modeled for me by adults.
I never did
expressing
either.
Expressing your struggles and your doubts. And it wasn't until I was older and we started going to some different churches that this was more common for this to happen. That, you know, we didn't have to be perfect and we didn't have to have this perfect life. And when my parents divorced, it was such a huge thing in the church that we ended up actually leaving mm-hmm. that church. It wasn't a place for us to go after my dad had left. We had to pick up and move to a completely different church. And I think that's just that's terrible.
I think that's
how
sad.
It had to be back then. Because I'm sure still to this day, it's still like that in some churches.
Because the church is the place for broken people to come.
Absolutely. And it's supposed to be a hospital.
Yes. Yes. And I am a big one for authenticity.
Me too.
I don't have a lot of patience for not being real.
I agree.
And I spent a lot of my life not being real because I didn't know it was safe to share that. And granted, you have to be able to get to a point to share your deepest struggles in a safe place. Mm-hmm. But even to admit that, hey, I'm not having a great day or something like that, I didn't ever feel like I could do that until several years ago when I started this whole life coaching journey. But I think not being able to share your struggles in the church is a huge problem.
I think it is, too, because I think it kind of melds itself into lie number two. That, well, even lie number one, they all kind of speak to each other, because if you're not allowed to share that you're struggling with something or you're dealing with something or you have some real things going on in your life, that does affect what you think God thinks of you. And it does affect how you perceive mm-hmm. church as just being an event where people get together in their Sunday clothes and that's all it is. But mm-hmm. it's so much bigger than that. And I think when you get to the point that you can share struggles and you can share the things you're doing, and even when you can share like the good moments in your life, sometimes that wasn't even celebrated much. It was just like you came there on Sundays and then you left and nobody really got to know each other all that well. And like I said, a lot of this you perceive as a child. So what you perceive as a child might not necessarily be what is happening as adults. We get a different perspective of church, and what might be going on in small groups doesn't necessarily happen on mm-hmm. a Sunday morning. But I think the vast majority of people, if you're listening to this, would probably agree that growing up in church, it was a lot. It was something that was kind of said or implied that you can't express struggles and doubts.
And I think even as an adult looking into that, I don't necessarily think that's just in the church. I think that's society in general.
I would agree with you, because just looking even just in mental health and the kind mm-hmm. of things that happen when people come out about dealing with certain issues in their mental health and the kind of things that are said in society and what people think. I think this trickles way down into all levels of society, not just the mm-hmm. church community.
So, okay, lie number four is that church leadership is only for the super spiritual. I love what this writer came up with.
I
love these lies that he sat down and took the time to think, what are the lies I believed growing up? Because a lot of them I've probably thought about but didn't know that, that's not real.
Right.
It's not true.
I agree. So if you grew up in the church, like Mandy and I grew up in the church, you probably tend to think of the leadership in your church as on some kind of spiritual pedestal. And probably until one of them have fallen off of that pedestal, you mm-hmm. might still have that mindset. But it's a really horrible place to put a human person mm-hmm. up on a pedestal, whether they are in leadership or not. But we tend to do this with spiritual leaders. Do you see that happening a lot, do you think?
I do. And I don't know so much in my own experience that I ever did that with the spiritual leaders that I knew. Mm-hmm. But maybe like with spiritual leaders that have become a little bit more famous across the country.
Right.
I think it's easier to do that sometimes with people you don't know mm-hmm. than the people that you do. But I was listening to one of my favorite pastors that I listen to is Stephen Furtick. And I listen to his podcast quite often. And he was talking about, I was listening to it at the gym the other day when he was talking about, I think it was his Mother's Day sermon. And he was just talking about how we compare ourselves to other people. And he was really talking about essentially this whole, you know, not sharing your struggles mm-hmm. or your doubts and that whole perception of being real. Mm-hmm. And he said, I hate it when, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have this written down, but he basically said, I hate it when I get together with a group of pastors and we're all like asking each other how we are. And we're like, hey, we're great. All this, our church is growing and we, you know, our podcast is soaring and we got 1,000 new people on Twitter just today and all of these things. And he goes, I hate that, man. I would love to be real. Like, I want to know what you're worried about. I want to mm-hmm. know the things that you're struggling with. Mm-hmm. And he is one who really does share that.
Absolutely.
A lot.
Absolutely. And I think seeing that from the pulpit mm-hmm. makes such a difference on how your congregation operates
yes.
as a whole. Because if they see it from the top, and this is not putting them on a pedestal. This is seeing them as fellow human
as
beings.
They are.
That they've been called into this position, but that doesn't mean that they are not fallible and that they can't make mistakes and they can't stumble. And usually those poor people have to stumble in front of everybody.
Yes.
And that's, you know, we could give them a little bit of grace, mm-hmm. I think, and remember that just because they are in leadership in the church doesn't mean they have some kind of super spiritual halo.
Exactly.
And give them a little bit of time, of a little bit of grace and a mm-hmm. chance to just be human once in a while.
I love how you wrote here that this putting somebody on a pedestal is a horrible place to put them, because all human beings will fail.
Mm-hmm.
All of us will sin. And this lie is why people have such a difficult time when church leaders fall.
I really believe that. I mean, if we didn't do this, we wouldn't be so like shocked
mm-hmm.
when pastors fall into sin. We're all in, and really, when you if you've been in the church a while, you know that, or if you've been in church leadership, you know that when you accept that title, there's a lot that goes with that, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of temptation that goes with that, and Satan works really hard to tear apart those families. And
yes.
I think if we would put those people and surround them with grace and with prayer instead of putting mm-hmm. them up on a pedestal, we could probably see a lot better improvement in their lives.
I'm
going
to have
well.
To totally listen to this podcast episode, because you just said some very wise words there.
Oh, thanks.
That I should probably listen to some more.
Sometimes I have my moments.
Sometimes we have our moments. I really like what you just shared. But then we have the last lie, which is number 5. And which one is that, Rachel?
Lie number 5 is that the Bible is mostly about rules. And for me, I don't know if I relate to this one nearly as much, but I can see in certain denominations where mm-hmm. the Bible is not necessarily taught as a way to learn about God and to develop your relationship with Jesus Christ. It's more of a do's and don'ts list
mm-hmm.
where this could really be a problem for some people. If you grew up in a church like that, where you didn't have access to the Bible to be able to read it on your own and develop that relationship, is more read to you
right.
on Sundays or on Wednesdays or doing classes, I can see where this could be definitely a problem.
Were you ever in Awana?
I was in Awana. Yes.
I read this and I kind of get really excited about debunking this lie because I used to kind of feel that way. Like the Bible is something I have to read because that's what good Christians do and I have to do it.
Right.
But it's so boring. That's how I used to think
of it. Right.
I don't think that anymore
mm-hmm.
because I've had new experiences with it. And then when you read different versions, like I said in a couple, I think last episode, I talked about how I love to take one version, like the NIV version, and then read a verse and then read it in the Message version, and you get a completely different understanding of it that gives you a little bit more wisdom and understanding.
I do that a lot
together.
Too. I like to use different versions of things. Yeah. But you know, one of the things that we put down here is maybe it wasn't so much a rule book for you, but maybe it was something more like you were saying with
yes.
Awana, where it's
you memorize it.
To earn points mm-hmm. and to be, you know, to play the games or whatever it is that you're doing. And sometimes we can take the Bible and turn it into this really weird,
yeah.
weird thing. And actually, this last Wednesday, I was at the church that we're attending right now, and the pastor was talking about how he grew up in the Quiet Time movement. And it was pretty much the same movement that you and I grew up mm-hmm. in, where it was the top priority of your day was
yes.
to have quiet time. And how much guilt he had as an adult growing up, or like when you would get to youth group and be like, oh, I didn't have my quiet time at all this week
yeah.
and all this stuff. And it turned into something on a to-do list. And it kind of reminds me mm-hmm. of that a little bit, because I've dealt with that as an adult, because I grew up in that movement too. Maybe you did, where quiet time was the big thing. And if you didn't have your daily quiet
yeah.
time, especially in the morning, because the morning is the only time you can do quiet time. And when I became a mom and all of a sudden quiet time was like non-existent mm-hmm. or maybe 5 minutes, I dealt with a bunch of guilt that
yeah.
I wasn't following the rules of how to do that.
Well, and plus when you have different schedules too, like all of a sudden, let's say that you no longer work days, you work nights.
Right.
Now what are you supposed to do? Your morning is your bedtime.
Exactly.
And you're exhausted. And
exactly.
So really, I loved learning. I think I learned this from Danny Johnson several years ago, that it doesn't matter when you read the Bible or when you spend time with God. What matters is that you do.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something really important to remember, especially when it comes to reading the Bible, because also some people think, you know, if I'm going to read the Bible, I have to do this in-depth study. Okay, I've had moments in my life where I've done the in-depth studies and they're great and there are pieces of wisdom to learn in that. Mm-hmm. But then there are also times, like lately, I'll be honest, I read my little devotional book by Joyce Myers and that's all I do.
I know. Some mornings all I get is a verse before the children wake up and they come and find me wherever I am.
Right. That's okay. The point is that you're still spending time in the Word, reading the Word, talking with God. I talk to God throughout my entire day.
Me too. I can't ever find time for long extended periods of prayer. I'm hoping as the children grow up, I can get back to doing that once in a while. But right now, this is what reality is. And I think when we remember that the Bible is about relationship, that book is about building a relationship with God and not about following the do's and don'ts list.
And it's so good. Oh my goodness.
We can debunk that lie.
Yes. The Bible is awesome. You should pick one up and read it. If you have trouble reading it, the Message version is a good place to start because it's a little bit more contemporary.
Absolutely. I would agree.
And it'll feel like you're reading a book, not the Bible, because of the format and everything. So if you grew up in church like Rachel and I did, you might have found yourself thinking through some of these lies yourself today, and maybe you realize that, hey, I still believe some of these lies. So we would love to have you just take a moment, do this homework assignment, okay? Just take a moment, come to our website, bigbluecouchcoaching.com, and share with us, how did these lies affect you growing up in the church? We would love for you to just take a moment and read that comment, share that comment, actually, and also, do they still affect you today? Are you still struggling with them today? And we would love to just hear you share that experience with us, because we're not the only ones who deal with this. This article that this writer wrote went viral.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It's crazy. So it's most likely something that you deal with as well.
Yeah, it's touched a nerve with a lot of people. So we want to hear your stories too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us girls on the Big Blue Couch. We look forward to chatting with you again next week on the Big Blue Couch, where life happens.